We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 18 tonight. If you want to be there, 1 Kings chapter 18, as we continue reading together through the books of 1 and 2 Kings. On Sunday nights, we've been trying to read through Kings and just make a few observations about it. In some of the chapters, we've done more of just kind of a flyover survey of some of the big points. In some other places, we've slowed down and gone more verse by verse, and that's going to be what we do tonight as we go through 1 Kings 18. If you've been with us, you might remember where we are in this book. It starts off with Solomon, and things seem pretty good, but then we have the division of the north and the south, and it just seems to get worse and worse after that until we get to Ahab, who is said to have been the worst up until this point. And then things kind of start to slow down a little bit, and there's several chapters now where we have Ahab, who's going to be the bad guy. He's the worst king we've encountered. But we have a good person who emerges. We have a person who's going to represent the Lord, and that person is Elijah. And so it's Ahab and Baal on one side, Elijah and the Lord on the other. And the action kind of slows down, in a sense, for a while. And we have some real detailed readings about what's going on with Ahab and Elijah. 1 Kings 18 is probably one of the more well-known chapters of 1 Kings. And it's an important chapter to this book, and really an important chapter to the whole Bible, where tonight we have Mount Carmel and Elijah on Mount Carmel. And that's what 1 Kings 18 will be. The way that I want us to try to move through this chapter is by looking at the conversations that are taking place. There's a lot of dialogue back and forth, and the chapter moves really by way of that dialogue and the people talking and the different conversations that are unfolding. And so that's what we're going to look at tonight. The first thing that happens in 1 Kings 18 is that Elijah is told to go to Ahab. So let's read 1 Kings 18, 1 and 2. Now it happened after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year. It says it's the third year. The third year of what? Well, last time we saw there's this famine. We're in the third year of the drought. It's the third year. Saying, go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the face of the earth. And we're going to see that we return to that at the very end of this chapter. That the rains are going to fall. That's how it starts, and then we get back to that at the very end, and a whole lot of things happen in between. So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. On the map, Samaria is around where I have the box there. We saw just kind of in passing in an earlier part of 1 Kings that Samaria was made the capital of the north. And if you look at this, it's a very central sort of location. If you were in the north, this is kind of right in the middle of everything. And it says that the famine was severe in Samaria. It's severe there. Things are not good. Things are not going well in Samaria. Well, now we have, if you remember, we said we're going to move through this by way of the conversations. So God has spoken to Elijah. Now we have Ahab and an individual named Obadiah who are talking. And this is one of those meanwhile kind of things. God has told Elijah to go to Ahab. Well, what's Ahab doing? What's going on where Ahab is? In verse 3, Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. So we're introduced to this person, Obadiah, who it says is over the household. And then it tells us who this Obadiah person is. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. For when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by fifties in a cave and provided them with bread and water. Obadiah, a person who fears the Lord, is over the household of Ahab, who is the very wicked king. So that's an interesting thing. Then Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go through the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys. Perhaps we will find grass and keep the horses and mules alive and not have to kill some of the cattle." So they divided the land between them to survey it. Ahab went one way by himself, and Obadiah went another way by himself. So they say they're going to go out and see how things are. Maybe they can find some grass. Maybe they can keep the animals alive because things are getting bad. So this is one of a survey passage in the Bible. My translation says they went out and did a survey. Ahab goes one way, and then Obadiah goes another way. And they're going to go out and survey things, scout things out, see how the land looks, because this is severe. It's very dry. And so while Obadiah is going out in his direction, doing his survey, he's going to encounter Elijah in verses 7 through 15. Now as Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah met him, and he recognized him and fell on his face and said, "Is this you, Elijah, my master?" He said to him, "It is I. Go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here." He said, "What sin have I committed that you are giving your servant into the hand of Ahab to put me to death? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent to search for you. And when they said, 'He is not here,' he made the kingdom or nation swear that they could not find you. And now you are saying, 'Go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here.' It will come about when I leave you that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you where I do not know. So when I come and tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me. Although I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Has it not been told to my master what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, that I hid 100 prophets of the Lord by fifties in a cave and provided them with bread and water? And now you are saying, 'Go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. He will then kill me.'" He says, "What is this about? I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to fear the Lord. And now here I am. I'm being put on the spot. Nobody's been able to find Elijah before. And if I go and tell Ahab Elijah is here, I'm sure the Spirit of the Lord is just going to carry you, Elijah, away. And then I'm going to die." And he's all worked up and worried about this. Then Elijah says in verse 15, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today." Elijah says, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to see Ahab, and that's what we're going to do. Well, now Ahab and Elijah have their meeting. Verse 16. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is this you, you troubler of Israel?" Maybe Ahab thinks that somehow Elijah is responsible for this drought. He says, you're troubling Israel. In verse 18, then Elijah says, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and you have followed the Baals." He says, Ahab, you're the one that's causing trouble. Things are the way they are because you're following the Baals. "Now then, send and gather to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Elijah says, I've got this proposal for you. This is what we're going to do. You get 850 prophets. We'll go to Mount Carmel, and we're all going to meet there. So that's where we are so far. When you look at where Mount Carmel is, we're over here in this region. There's a territory here called Carmel or Carmel. And then Mount Carmel proper is part of that. This is a place that we see mentioned in some other places in the Bible. There's a few places in the prophets where this area is talked about. And it doesn't really seem to be an inherently bad kind of a place. This is part of the territory of Israel. It does seem to have been associated with Baal worship during this time, and that's probably why this site is proposed. Some think that there is also worship of the Lord that went on in this region, and it is a part of Israel. But here we are. We're going to be at Mount Carmel. This is a picture of generally around where people think that these events that we're looking at tonight would have occurred. So it's always interesting to see a picture of the general place, general geography of a place. The odds here don't seem to be in Elijah's favor. If you just look at the numbers, when they go here, it's 850 verses 1. It says, get 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah. Well, Elijah sure is outnumbered. If it's about how good the prophets are, how strong the prophets are, well, the odds aren't in Elijah's favor. And we see time and again in the Bible where the odds don't really seem to be on the side of God's people. But yet, it's not so much about the people or the number of the people as it is about the God of those people. And so here is Elijah, one prophet against 850. So what's going to happen? Well, now Elijah is going to talk to the people, picking up in verse 20. So Ahab sent a message among all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you hesitate? Or some translations will have waver or falter. How long will you hesitate between two opinions? The English Standard has the word limping, which really is the most literal translation of that. How long will you go limping back and forth? How long will you go hobbling along is the idea. These are not people taking a stance, having a position, like what we talked about this morning. He says, how long are you going to go back and forth between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal, follow him. Who is the true God? Decide who the true God is and then follow that God. Don't keep going back and forth between two opinions. You can't serve two masters. But the people did not answer him a word. So remember that at this point, that they don't say anything when they're given the two opinions right now, or the two, he says, there's two opinions to choose, two thoughts. They don't say anything. They don't take a position. They don't take a stance. He says, choose, and they remain silent. And that'll be important, I think, as we get further into this. Then Elijah said to the people, I alone am left, a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Now let them give us two oxen, and let them choose one ox for themselves and cut it up and place it on the wood, but put no fire under it. And I will prepare the other ox and lay it on the wood, and I will not put a fire under it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And I think that language itself may be significant. He says, call on your God, and I'll call on the Lord. The God who answers by fire, He is God. And all the people said, that is a good idea. Well, that sounds like a good idea. Let's move forward with this. So Elijah's going to have his part. The people, the prophets, are going to have their part. And we're going to see here who the true God is. Well, this should be very easy for Baal to be able to do. This is Baal's contest to win. He should have no trouble doing this. Baal, as we've mentioned before, is the storm god, the god of the crops. Baal can throw down the thunder. Baal can send the lightning. This is a picture of Baal that we used in our idolatry class. This is referred to as Baal with thunderbolt. And I would think people would come up with some more scholarly kind of fancy title for these things. Baal with thunderbolt is what this is called. But they say that it depicts Baal throwing something down, and there's a harvest. And this should be easy for Baal. Baal can throw down some thunder. Baal can throw down some lightning. After all, that's what Baal does. He can just do that. And this is Baal's contest to win. Well, what's going to happen? Now we have Elijah and the prophets, in verse 25. So Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one ox for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many. He says, there's a whole bunch of you, so you can go first. You go first here. And call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it. Then they took the ox, which was given them, and they prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon. Notice the time references that we're going to have as we go through this. Right now it's morning, and it says that they do this from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they made. It came about at noon, or midday, that Elijah mocked them and said, call out with a loud voice, for he is God. Either he is occupied or gone aside or is on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and needs to be awakened. Maybe your God is just sleeping in the middle of the day. Maybe your God's taking a nap at noon. So they cried with a loud voice and cut themselves according to their custom, with swords and lances until the blood gushed out on them. When midday was past, they raved until the time of the evening sacrifice. But there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid attention. Baal here is being depicted as a very lifeless God. They've gone about this all day long. They've been at this now for a long time, from morning until evening. And they've been doing all sorts of things. And there's no answer. Baal is not being depicted as being a living God. Now we have Elijah and the people, starting in verse 30. Then Elijah said to all the people, come near to me. So all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, Israel shall be your name. So with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar, large enough to hold 2 measures of seed. Then he arranged the wood and cut the ox in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill 4 pitchers with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. The water flowed around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. Now, if you want something to be able to catch on fire, are you going to just douse it with water? and just fill it up with water and do that one time and then do it another time and then do it another time. He's making the challenge seemingly more difficult. We're making sure here that there's no doubt that this is going to be the true and living God. There's no body that would be able to do this, catch this on fire, burn this up. Only the living God would be capable of doing this. In the next paragraph, starting in verse 36, at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near and said, we've already seen Elijah being a man of prayer in the previous chapter, and now Elijah prays again. O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and lit up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, these people who previously did not answer a word, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. Then Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. People say, the Lord, He is God, at the sight of this. We mentioned last time that the name Elijah means something like, the Lord is my God. It's El and Yah. We've talked about some of these names of God. Elijah is, the Lord is my God. And now the one whose name means, the Lord is my God, has prayed to the Lord, has been involved in this showdown on Mount Carmel, and now the people say, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. Well, Elijah now comes back and talks to Ahab again. If you remember, this chapter started out by saying that it's about to rain. Go and talk to Ahab. And now we come back to that again at the end, where Elijah basically is going to say to Ahab, you need to get on home. The rains are about to come. Now Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of the roar of a heavy shower. So Ahab went up to eat and drink. But Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he crouched down on the earth and put his face between his knees. He said to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. So he went up and looked and said, there is nothing. And he said, go back seven times. It came about at the seventh time that he said, behold, a cloud as small as a man's hand is coming up from the sea. And he said, go up, say to Ahab, prepare your chariot and go down, so that the heavy shower does not stop you. In a little while the sky grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a heavy shower. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel. Then the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he girded up his loins, and out ran Ahab to Jezreel. Well, 1 Kings 18 shows that the Lord, He is God. Baal would appear to be completely defeated. He should be completely defeated in the minds of the people here. Baal is not a living God. Baal doesn't answer. Baal doesn't hear. It's the Lord God who does. In some ways, I think this chapter is a chapter about conviction. If you remember in the beginning, Elijah says, stop going back and forth. Basically, you can't serve two masters. Either serve the Lord or serve Baal, but don't choose one. Don't go back and forth. And they don't even say anything. They seem like people with just no conviction, no position, no stance. And then when they see the powerful display on Mount Carmel, they then say, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. And that makes me wonder if where we are in that story. Are we the people at the beginning of that chapter or more like the ones at the end? Are we ever guilty of just kind of limping back and forth, hobbling back and forth between serving God one day, serving idols the other? Or are we people of conviction? People who have seen the work of God, who believe in the power of God and are willing to say the Lord, He is God. And it's very interesting that all of this occurs on a mountain. It's Mount Carmel where this happens. The mountain is an important place in the Bible. There's lots of things that happen on mountains. Mount Sinai. If you think back to Mount Sinai, it's where Moses receives the covenant. And meanwhile, the people there are making a golden calf. Another instance of idolatry. And after that, there's several or many of them that are destroyed, kind of like the chapter here with the prophets of Baal. And so in some ways, 1 Kings 18 kind of looks backward, I think, to Mount Sinai. It kind of echoes some things there, God being in covenant with the people. And yet it also would seem to look forward. Because as we continue to read through the Bible, and we get to the Gospels, there's a lot of things that happen on mountains, or in association with mountains. In the Gospel of John, or in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is taken to a high mountain as part of the temptation. Jesus preaches a sermon on the mountain, the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus goes to the mountain to pray. We have the Mount of Transfiguration, where Jesus is shown to be greater than Moses and Elijah. The book of Revelation talks about assembling on Mount Zion. There's lots of talk about mountains. God showing Himself, revealing Himself, people being with God on the mountain. There's a lot of that kind of talk. And if we come back to our scripture reading for this evening in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews is a book of comparisons. One of the comparisons in Hebrews is that we have a better mountain. It says in the Old Covenant, the people had come to Mount Sinai, and it describes Mount Sinai. But then it says that we have come to Mount Zion and to the New Jerusalem. That as people of a better covenant, we have a better mountain. We have come to Mount Zion. The showdown on Mount Carmel shows God to be the true God. We need to be people of conviction who not only say, the Lord, He is God, but through our actions and through our deeds, we show that we believe the Lord, He is God. It's not enough to just say, Lord, Lord. We have to follow it with action. There's only one true and living God. There's only one God who will hear us when we call. And so this week, let us say, the Lord, He is God. Let us be people who long for Mount Zion, who long for the place of God. And let us take a stance, take a position, and live as though the Lord, He is God. If we can help you with anything tonight, whether there be someone here who needs to be baptized tonight, or if there's someone who needs the prayers of the church, if we can help you in some way, please let it be known as we stand and sing.